Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the Golf Shake podcast. My name is Ryan Rastall. For those of you that are new to the podcast, hello and welcome. As usual, I'm joined, well, not as usual, actually. You've had a couple of weeks off, Matt, but Matt Holbrook is here with me to talk about the latest goings on in the world of golf. We're also going to talk through a little bit about your holiday, Matt, and also your kind of reintroduction back to golf since returning from your holiday as well, because I know it would have been absolutely killing you not to have been on the golf course for that length of time.
Not just the golf course, you know. So obviously, through COVID, and you know, we had plenty of time without playing golf physically, but going 10 days for me without even hitting balls, you know, it's like no golf of any kind. Like through COVID, I was still hitting balls in the garden and stuff, but yeah, it wasn't. Look, I had a lovely time. Firstly, it was nice to take the kids away on their first and probably only ever family holiday, because I tell you what, I'm not doing that again.
Where have you been? Where did you go?
So we went to we took the kids to Turkey.
Lovely.
We went for 10 days all inclusive. The kids didn't know about it until the morning of. We just literally woke them up at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
Took them off to the airport. So literally they woke them up at 1 o'clock and we was on a plane by 6 o'clock. We stopped in Marmaris. So not renowned for golfing destination as far as Turkey's concerned, which I'll be honest, I was okay about. I was quite happy to go away and not play. I do get away with my fair share. So, I like to think that I pick my battles wisely. It was nice to let the kids enjoy themselves and, eat as much ice cream. We had a few trips out, a water park and a couple of boat trips and, loads of stuff. It was a nice time, nice break.
Good.
Yeah. But let me just also say, what about that little jingle at the start of the podcast, by the way?
Did you like that?
Yeah.
The little swoosh of the golf swing and the little ball going in the hole was quite a nice little addition to it as well. But
yeah.
No, it's for those of you that can hear stuff going in the background here, you can kind of tell how unprofessional. Well, not you're a professional, Matt. Obviously, I'm not. I'm sat in the golf club clubhouse, quite close to the kitchen. So if you can hear, we've got a particularly angry chef in there that likes shouting around a little bit, and also crockery smashing around. Then that's what it is. So apologies. I'm at the epicenter of Howley Hall Golf Club at the moment, and it's quite a busy day. There's lots going on. Lots of food coming out the kitchen. So, apologies for any background noise you may hear. But, yes, such is the busy 100-mile-an-hour world in which we live, Matt, that I've got to do it outside the kitchen at the golf club.
This is true. I think it's authentic, the odd rattle of a spoon on a china cup. It's,
To be honest, I also quite like doing it in the middle of the day like this, because normally it's in the evening after a full day at work, a full day of lessons, and I'll be honest, you don't get me at my best most of the time, mate. I'm pretty tired. And it's normally having just put the kids to bed as well. And probably you're in the same boat too. So hopefully it's a little bit fresher, more vibrant, and a bit more energetic today as well. We've got a lot to get through, Matt. So we haven't spoken about anything that's gone on in the world of golf for 2 weeks. But last week on the podcast, Kieran and Tom were with me. We were down at the Springs in Oxfordshire. So me and Tom were down there filming some content that will be coming to the YouTube channel fairly soon. So we've been doing some putter reviews, some loads of footwear reviews that we've been sent by various different manufacturers as well. We're doing not only standalone reviews of each of the pairs that we've been sent, but also kind of doing a bit of a comparison of the best spiked and spikeless pairs available out there on the market at the moment. So keep your eyes peeled for those. But the real reason we were down there is on behalf of Darwin Escapes, who own the Springs, but also have various different holiday parks and kind of caravan parks around the UK. But golf-wise, have the KP Club up in Pocklington in Yorkshire, and also the fabulous Dundonald Links, which you'll have heard me waxing lyrical about many times on the podcast. But the Springs is down in Oxfordshire. We went down there, spent one night, played a bit of golf, got out on the golf course and sort of experienced everything that the Springs had to offer. So we've done a bit of a resort video for them, which you should see fairly soon too, and see how me and Tom got on.
the Springs also home of one of the greatest sporting achievements known to man.
I thought that would be coming next.
Oh, I didn't want to bring it up, but your guy may have come. Did I finish third in the Trilby Tour Championship there? Fourth? Anyway, it was a solid round of golf. I won't go into detail, but made four birdies.
Very good.
Shot two over with a double.
I played the golf course actually, and it's
easy, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. You've still got to. I mean, the rough was thick, to be honest. When you missed a fairway, it was very, very thick. But it's scorable, definitely. I think. But I quite enjoyed it. You know, it's quite pretty flat. There's not really too much of a walk involved, but it was nice. Yeah, it was good. There's a few kind of risk reward holes, a few drivable ones as well. But there's a bit of water comes into play around the golf course, and a few nice ones. I mean, notably the par three, which I think is the eighth. Yes, it is that we played, which was lovely. So we've done, like I say, some nice footage out there on the course, as well as some drone flyovers that we did when we were there. So, and we got it on a beautiful sunny day, which was even better. But yeah, Matt, I was there on that day. I can say I was there to witness your lovely round of golf last year in the Trilby Tour. So yeah, it was nice going back there, to be honest. And we went into the local town and had a bit of food there too. And kind of the local area is lovely, quite picturesque and quite nice. You go through some really nice villages with sort of thatched roofs and a lot of the buildings there as well. It's quite old, but quite cool at the same time. So yeah, it was good. It was a nice little couple of days down there, really. It was pretty busy while we were there, but yeah, but very, very good. So like I say, the last couple of weeks of golf, we did speak about it last week when we were on the podcast with Kieran and Tom, but the PGA was obviously on while you were away, and few amazing stories to come out of there, notably Brooks winning again, and also Michael Block, the phenomenon that is Michael Block.
Yes, I am. Sorry, I just muted my microphone because whilst I'm at home, it is half term and the kids decide to talk to each other through Alexa rather than moving from room to room. So okay, if you do hear any Alexa announcements. I when I switched off from golf for 10 days, like I literally didn't see a thing. I was watching the scoreboard, so I was able to follow along with the Block's party and the Block story, which was good. But yeah, other than that, I was almost oblivious to it. You know, it was trying to follow it on a scoreboard rather than watching it on TV was very, very difficult. But you know, congrats to Brooks Koepka. He's you know, it's nice to see him winning again. And from what I saw, I did catch some highlights. It did look like a really, really good tournament.
Alexa, tell the kids to keep quiet.
I'm going to mute it now and tell him.
It's fine, mate. We've all got stuff going on as well. So, yeah, don't worry. But, I mean, it was great. Awesome to watch. He obviously played this week. Didn't have his best week ever. But Emiliano Grillo did have a really good week. So it was good to see him win again. First time since 2015. Beating Adam Schenk in a playoff. Making a 2-second extra hole on the par three that they made and won in quite nice style. I don't know if you saw much of this, Matt, but it was pretty wet at times, some difficult conditions, and notably that shot that Grillo hit that was in kind of a stream of water running down the path that took about 5 minutes for his ball to stop, only for him having to drop it all the way back at the start again. So, yeah, there was a few bits went on. England's Harry Hall finished quite nicely, despite being a bit disappointed in the fact that he didn't win. I think he himself kind of admitted that he made a few mistakes on that final day and probably could have got the job done. But I'm sure the 25-year-old Englishman will have a few more chances out there. It's his rookie season on the PGA Tour, and I'm sure we'll see him up there again fairly soon. We also had Scottie Scheffler with a decent finish, really good performance and kind of bodes well going into this week, which we'll talk about a little bit later on. But the thing that kind of, and I know Emiliano Grillo is a fantastic player, right? He's won twice on the PGA Tour, but looking at, he won $1.56 million for winning this tournament, and that takes him to $16.8 million career earnings, which for someone who, I'm not saying he's kind of a journeyman or a background player, but he's not a guy that you see up there every week, right? To think that he's won nearly $17 million on the golf course is frightening.
It's been quite a while, hasn't it, between the wins?
Yeah.
Must just be, you know, obviously if you've got a level of kind of consistency, then it just goes to show that you can make some decent money.
Yeah.
I mean, without looking at it, I'm sure he's had probably a couple of second, third place finishes that will really bump that up.
I'm sure he has. I mean, you know, for him to, his last win was 2015, which again, he won in a playoff. But yeah, I think you just don't appreciate when you look at these numbers, kind of how much money these guys make on the PGA Tour. It's pretty frightening, isn't it? If you can, like you say, if you've got that level of consistency, you can keep your card each year, which no mean feat, don't get me wrong. I mean, it's literally so, so difficult to even keep your card on the PGA Tour, let alone be competitive week in, week out, like some of these sort of juggernauts of golf that we see, like Scottie Scheffler that we've mentioned before, who never seems to be out of the top 10. It's just a level of consistency and a level of golf that we can only dream about, really. And I don't think we quite appreciate how good these guys are.
Well, this is something else that Michael Block said, wasn't it, last week, that he can shoot 65, but he can't do it 4 days in a row. And that's the difference.
Yeah, it's so tough. And I mean, he's obviously not played his best this week, but will still have learned a lot from playing that event. And you know, I think he plays again in a couple of weeks' time in Canada. Is that right?
Yeah, I think he got invited into that.
Yeah, that's cool.
Just one thing on Harry Hall, right? So he's, I believe he's West Cornwall. Is it West Cornwall?
Oh, you've got me. I don't know.
Okay. I'm going to say West Cornwall. I might be wrong. It's West somewhere, because I remember looking at it thinking I've played the course and done a feature for Golf Shake, actually.
Okay.
But I've got to be honest, like, and this is not a criticism. His body language and the way that he was carrying himself in that final round looked like, to me, somebody that just almost didn't feel like he belonged there.
Yeah.
It looked to me like he knew that he was almost out of his depth.
Yeah, imposter syndrome kind of thing. Yeah,
yeah, I think so. And I felt sorry for him a little bit, because there was one time where he hit a shot and kind of short-sided himself, and he had, like, you know, his hands went up to his head. And it looked like, at that point, I thought to myself, and this was only like 6 or 7 holes in, I think, and I thought to myself, this guy doesn't stand a chance. And like I say, I don't mean that disrespectfully. It was just an observation.
Yeah, I mean, in the end, he was pretty close, wasn't he? But finished a bit.
He bogeyed the last, didn't he? And
yeah, he
did.
Sort of hit it in the water there, and yeah, didn't. But you know, he made a bogey and missed out by one of getting in the playoff. And you know, who knows then what can happen? But I think he'll take, once he actually kind of gets over the fact that he didn't win, I think he'll probably take quite a lot from it, and hopefully, you know, we'll see him contend fairly soon. I mean, he's obviously got game, hasn't he, to get into that position. And, you know, he was up there for pretty much the majority of the tournament, really, and didn't seem to be that fazed by it. But I think it's all right playing, you know, your first, second, third round. When you get into the fourth and, it, you know, you've got a chance to win, it, completely different emotions can consume you, and you've got to learn to deal with them, haven't you? And you've got to kind of find a way to get over the line, like all those best players seem to be able to do. And you know, look at Brooks Koepka the week before. There was no one was going to beat him with that. I mean, he was literally just so focused. And I'm sure at times, if he was actually being honest with us, he would say, you know, there are parts of that round where, yeah, maybe I thought I was going to let that slip, or maybe, you know, Victor Hovland played pretty well and put a bit of pressure on him, and Scheffler did okay and kind of had a bit of a run going on. Maybe there was times when he looked at the leaderboard and thought, do you know what, they might catch me here. But he wouldn't ever admit that. But outwardly, he just looks like he looks like he's there for a fight, doesn't he, Koepka, really? And I get what you're saying. Harry Hall didn't look like that.
No. And actually, you know, you'd put, like you said, you'd put Brooks in amongst those guys, but you're Harry Hall. You know, ultimately you finished tied third with the world number one. You've got Ricky Fowler and Sam Burns a couple of shots back. You've got Max Homer. You've got Justin Rose. You've got, you know, all these, you know, big names, Victor Hovland, you know, and all of a sudden you're in and amongst them. But I'm sure the $500,000 that you took home for a tied third will take the sting off somewhat as well.
Yeah, it kind of, yeah, I'm sure it makes the next few weeks and months on tour a little bit more bearable, knowing that you're closer to keeping your card than you were. And I don't know how much you need to win to keep your card on the PGA Tour, but I'd imagine he's well on the way there with a check like that.
You would have thought so.
Obviously the PGA Tour was great. European Tour, another win for Pablo Larrazabal.
Two in 3 weeks?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty damn good, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, he's obviously playing well. Another great performance by Adrian Ortegi and, two Adrians. Maronk was up there as well, wasn't he? So, again, another good finish. But Pablo, I mean, he just seems to get it done. And particularly on golf courses, like, they played in Holland this week, which looked pretty tough, to be honest. And it was kind of quite kind of heathlandy and almost linksy in places as well, where it's had some pretty deep, scary rough when you did miss some of the putting surfaces. But his short game is just so good, isn't it? We spoke about this when he won the other week, but
yeah,
some of the up and downs he makes are just scary good, which you kind of associate with some of these Spanish players over the years, you know, Seve being the kind of catalyst, I suppose, for that. But you know, you look at the likes of Olazabal and Garcia and Larrazabal that all just seem to hit it in some horrible places and just survive. But yeah, Pablo is very popular guy, very popular player, always seems to be fairly happy out there on the golf course. And yeah, definitely another popular winner.
Definitely. I actually watched a fair bit of it as well. It's,
okay.
Yeah. Obviously, after coming back, we didn't do much this weekend. So, yeah, it was nice, chilled out. Watched a lot of golf on Saturday and Sunday, actually.
Is there anything that particularly impressed you about him? Was there any sort of part of the game you thought kind of got him over the line and kind of stood out above everybody else?
Do you know what? Just in watching, not necessarily that, but what I did notice is that there were so many chops and changes in the leaders. Every time I looked at the leaderboard, I felt like somebody else was leading. But then when he got to the leaderboard, I thought, do you know, he's probably going to stick there. And I don't know whether that's because he won a couple of weeks back as well, or whether that's because, you know, the experience sometimes just, you know, helps people get over the line. You know, I was looking out for, personally, I was looking out for Todd Clements.
Okay.
Who came off the challenge tour last year, only because, and it's probably the only thing that I will ever have in common with a European Tour golfer was the fact that he was actually a junior at my old golf club.
Okay, cool.
And we won the same competition, so my name's up on the wall like 5 or 6 years after he won it.
Yes.
So yeah, so we kind of look out for him, and I'm sure he's going to get a win at some point. And he was in the mix, but you know, more learning for him. So yeah, but no, it was I do enjoy it. I do enjoy when it's nip and tuck. I thought Adrian Maronk might come through. Nice to see Appy Barmerat playing well again.
Yeah.
As well. So yeah,
everyone loves a bit of Kiradek. He's a good lad, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Again,
yeah.
Another guy who looks like he's having tons of fun when he's out there on the golf course, which is pretty
exactly.
Good.
Yeah.
We also had an event on LIV, so over in DC. Harold Varner III coming out as the winner, just edged Brandon Grace, who has come second and also lost in the playoff in the event before to DJ, so obviously playing some great golf as well. I know you won't have watched any of this, Matt, but it was...
I didn't even know there was one this week. Like, genuinely, didn't know.
I think a lot of people are struggling to get kind of into LIV, and I get it, I do. I mean, I just love golf, so I just look out for when all the events are on, to be honest, and I do keep a track of, don't get me wrong, the whole team sort of system is lost on me. I'm not really a fan of that, but yeah, I just I like watching some of these guys play, particularly obviously Cam Smith and Brooks, DJ, those sorts of guys, but Brandon Grace is looking pretty good at the minute. And the next event, Matt, is at somewhere that is on my bucket list to play golf, and that's Valderrama, which it'll be great to get those guys over there and enjoying the Costa del Sol sunshine. So, yeah, I mean, like I say, it's another good event. They broke all the records for the for any attendance that they've had so far in a tournament in America live. So a lot of people were there watching. It just looks good. It just looks like a good party every single event that you go to. And whether you like golf or not, or you're new to golf or know loads about it, I think it looks like an event you can go to and still have a pretty good time. So I'm sure the one in Spain will be pretty good as well. That's kind of what's gone on last week out of the way. Let's talk a little bit about your golf then, Matt, because I know you want to have a bit of a chat about this. And for those of you that don't know, well, to be fair, Matt, since coming back from your holiday, you've crammed a load in. So I've seen videos of you practicing. I've seen videos of you playing. I've seen some of your scorecards. I've seen some threads on social media.
Having a bit of a...
Yeah, well...
Letting it all out, I think.
Yeah, so. I think it was almost a collective therapy session for you yesterday. But tell us a little bit about what's brought that about. What went wrong? What's been going on in your golf game? And I'm pretty sure a lot of the listeners will be able to identify with that as well.
Yeah, so when I got back from my holiday, firstly, I know, like, we joke and stuff, and I know I do play a lot of golf, but 10 days without even swinging a club for me, without even holding a club, for me is quite a long time, right? I kind of lose things very quickly, right? Golf is not something that comes naturally to me. I have to work hard at it. And if I don't work hard, it's almost like my ability levels drop slightly, which, I know is not really the case. It's, you know, you don't just become a crap golfer overnight. But...
Oh, you can.
You absolutely can, I suppose. But, to be, kind of mid-single figure golfer, you know, you've got some level of ability in there. That said, I managed to get out the day that I got back. So we got home quite early Wednesday morning. So this is, in theory, like about a week ago. And I went over and played about 4:30, 5:00 that Wednesday afternoon. So I was tired. But I was desperate just to get out and, see a couple of mates and smell the grass and show off my tan and stuff like that. And I've had a couple of online lessons with Sam, my pro, and if Sam is listening, just want to send my congratulations to Sam and his wife Morgan, who have welcomed their second child, baby girl, into the Forgan family.
Oh, nice, cool.
Yeah, so
congratulations.
I've had a couple of he's doing a bit of online lessons, and the most frustrating thing for me, right, is that I've always battled with my long game, especially off the tee. Drive has always been a bit of Achilles heel. I have good days, and if I have good days, I score well. If I have bad days, I'm going to score poorly. And I'm actually really happy with where the driver is at the moment. I probably haven't had as much confidence in not just how the swing looks, but the results that I'm getting, the distance, generally feel like I'm hitting the driver at the moment, and I've got a pretty good idea of where it's going to go. So I'm really, really happy with that. And tee to green is probably the best I've been playing for quite a while. However, I am now, and I can't pretend it's anything other than the yips. It is a proper mental block with my putting. And it's absolutely soul destroying, for want of a better phrase. It's not something that I would wish on my worst enemy. Statistically, putting has always been a big strength of mine. I'm averaging 30, 31 putts around. But right now I can't, it's a really, like, I tried to describe it to my wife yesterday, because obviously she doesn't fully understand, bless her. But as a smoker, I try to explain to my wife, like, she knows to put a cigarette into her lips and she knows how to light a cigarette lighter. I said, imagine putting your thumb on that lighter and not physically be able to actually light that cigarette. You know what to do. You know how to do it. In practice, it's absolutely fine. You can light it every time. But for whatever reason, you just can't.
Analogy, but I get what you're saying. Yeah.
I spoke to Darren of Golf Shake fame earlier today, and I was like, I said the same time. I was like, imagine going to your coffee machine. You've put the pod in or whatever, and all you've got to do is press the button, but something's just stopping you from pressing that button and you can't do it. And in practice, you know, the putting stroke, it's not perfect, but do you know what? I can get the ball starting online. I can get it rolling nicely. I'm doing my aim point drills, my distance control. Everything is fine. But as soon as I get out onto the golf course, you know, the first hole yesterday, I played my first 36 hole scratch event of the summer. First hole yesterday, you know, three putted from 8 foot. Went on to three putt 6 times in 9 holes, and I couldn't wait to get off the golf course. I wanted the ground. It was embarrassing. That's what I was yesterday. I was embarrassed because, you know, I play in these scratch events to, you know, one for the competition, but you know, kind of compare myself to some of the other better golfers in my local area. You know, and when you're, you know, ultimately I actually NR'd in the first round on the 10th, which is not something I do ever, if, you know, not even often, but rarely ever. And yeah, by the 11th, 12th hole, I was contemplating how far it was going to, you know, how long it was going to take me to walk back to the car.
Yeah.
And I was embarrassed. I was embarrassed. It was, you know, I didn't know where to look. I didn't know, you know, I didn't know how to conduct myself, you know, because it's something that I've had issues once or twice in the past, but this is almost like it's bang, it's there now. And I think one of the worst things is like everybody wants to help. Everybody wants to give you some advice. And, you know, it's, I stand by the fact it's not a technical issue.
No, it's more of a cognitive thing, I think. And it is tough, don't get me wrong. Because, and there is no kind of anyone who says they can cure the yips in like 10 minutes, like you see some pillocks saying online, they can't because it's very much a. And everybody's different. You know, I've taught people before who've had problems like this where they stand over the ball and they literally. It's like their hands are being controlled by somebody else. Do you know what I mean? Like it's like an out-of-body experience for them when they stood over the ball. And, you know, they're there looking at themselves put and just can't do it. And it sometimes I've had people that have had full swing yips as well where they just can't take the club head back and they can't hit a shot and can't commit to it and can't hit, you know, it might be a driver or chip in and things. You find it with chipping quite a lot. But... Yeah, putting's a thing that obviously it's such a skill because the ball, you know, just like every shot in golf, the ball's not moving, is it? It's just there on the floor, and there's no real, unlike any other shot in golf, where you know you could have a bad lie or it could be on a really crazy slope, and I mean you can be a little bit in putting, but it tends to be lying quite nicely, and it tends to be a fairly easy shot to play. Do you know what I mean? That almost makes it worse, doesn't it? So everybody is different in the way that they deal with this, but what I would say is that if you keep going through the processes that you're going through, then you will build some more feel, won't you? Become more automatic, and it will kind of, instead of it being something that you think about when you stood over the ball, your body will do more of it automatically, won't it? Yeah. So, and I think that, I mean, for people in the past that I've taught, getting them to putt with other putters sometimes helps. So maybe complete different designs to what you've got. So if you've got a mallet, try something really small and bladed just to practice with, see how you get on. Cause sometimes it kind of refocuses you to the actual feel of the putt. So like what the face feels like and kind of what the ball feels like off the face and the grip being maybe a different thickness and stuff like that. And add, you know, put some variables in there like that, that, you know, you are going to then build up more feel, I suppose, with different products that you use. So I don't know if you've got any old putters, Matt, that you've still got kicking about in the garage like most people have.
I've definitely got one. I mean, my issue is in the 15 odd years I've been playing golf, I've only ever had like 3 putters. It's not something, because it's always been a strength, I've never really wanted to change or dabble in, you know, like you say, I know people have got like 10, 12 putters in their garage. You know, I've never been that person because it's, you know, because I'm a good putter. That's why it's almost like there's no need to change.
I always go through a period at the start of the year when, cause I don't play as much as some people during the winter. I always like, it's always the time when I go to Turkey, like start of March, when I actually start playing golf, I'm just clueless at putting. I would say putting is probably the best part of my game, that and driving. And for the first month of the season, I am clueless when it comes to putting. My feel's gone. I can't start it online. I just hate the look of, you know, stood over the ball with a putter. I just can't see myself hitting a good one. And all I'd say is that if I went out there right now, I'm very confident in my putting because I've done loads of it. But yeah, I know what you're saying. It kind of just hits you like a train from nowhere, doesn't it? And you just don't really know what's caused it. And kind of, yeah, exactly. And that's obviously the most frustrating thing, isn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, like I say, like I know people are genuine. They're only trying to offer help, advice, support. But, you know, I almost feel like it's not, you know, it's like it's nothing anybody can say or do. You know, I'm practicing and it's absolutely fine. Even like yesterday, before the event yesterday, I hit a few balls on the range, went out and hit a few putts, and I was rolling it lovely. I bounced on the first tee, full of confidence. Like I genuinely thought it was going to be a good day. You know, and then literally it was, you know, a par five. I actually drove it into a bunker. I didn't think I could reach off the tee because it was into wind. You know, played a sensible second shot. The third come up short, so chipped on to about 8 foot. You know, and this is what I'm trying to explain to people. Like, I had an 8 foot putt, slightly maybe uphill. You know, no more than a ball outside the left. And I probably hit this 8 foot putt maybe 2 foot.
Yeah.
And it didn't go anywhere near the hole. It went off at a 45 degree angle. And then what happens is then you've got a 6 foot putt for a bogey, you know, and then all of a sudden that one does mean more to you because what you don't want to do is you don't want to make a double bogey on the first hole.
Well, yeah, I mean, it then becomes, you know, it's a cycle really of kind of you getting embarrassed about failing.
Yes.
Other people seeing you missing putts and thinking, God, are we allowed to swear on this podcast? I don't know. I'm not very good at putting. And then you kind of, you're almost talking yourself down. And then you're thinking about other yips that you've done that day or your bad experiences that you've had. And then you make strokes after that where you're probably maybe gripping it really hard to stop yourself yipping it. And they're almost like over controlled kind of wooden strokes that you don't normally make. And then you miss them as well, because there's no freedom in your hands and arms. Do you know what I mean? It's just, and then you go back to the start again where you stood over the ball, not knowing what's going to come out. And it is frustrating. I completely get where you're coming from because I've done it myself. And I guess it's something that, again, I throw it open to the people listening. Have you found any miracle cure for yipping it? And have you found any way that you can stop yourself doing it? Because, like I say, I've taught loads of people over the years, and different things has worked for different people. Like, you know, things like, obviously I've said changing your putter or just changing something about the setup. I've even got people putting left-handed to get the feel of doing it that way. I've had people close their eyes when they're putting. I've had, you know, loads of different, gripping it right, left below right or right below left, whichever they don't do at the moment, changing that a little bit. And for me, I think it's a way of building the feel that you have for putting by changing some of the variables. So things like the putter that you use, and obviously the type of face that it's got in it will feel different to a different one, the grip size, the length, all these kind of, you know, tangible things that we can just change out to then make your body and your kind of hands and arms react to that and kind of build the feel that you have. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. And look, it had been brewing, I'm not going to lie. And one of the things that a fair few, the one consistent that people are coming to me with is recommending the claw grip, which I had tried previously just messing around and it felt absolutely disgusting. I'm not going to lie. But of late, I've been trying, just when I've been practicing, just hitting a few more putts using it, and it's starting to feel more comfortable now. You know, I did speak to Sam and I said, look, this is what's happening. I'm worried about it. And, you know, Sam's, you know, being super supportive. He's saying, look, you know, it's one of them things, you know, you don't become a bad putter overnight. You are a good putter. I wouldn't be changing your grip at the moment. Just persevere and just see how we get on. And I kind of get that. I think changing technical aspects of it when you're going through this is almost probably the worst thing to do, but at the same time, it could be the best thing to do. So, you know, the next time I go and play, I might try and putt with a claw and see if that makes any kind of difference with, especially with certain types of putts, certain lengths. You know, give me anything inside 8 foot, maybe 6 foot. I feel supremely confident. You know, I'm gonna make a note.
Is it longer ones that you're struggling with then? Yeah.
Well, this is the next thing I need to do is I need to make a note of what putts I've got.
It's normally short ones that people get a bit.
Yeah, no, put me
strokes not very free. Do you know what I mean? So
no, it's weird. Put me inside 10 foot actually, and I feel pretty comfortable. Okay. I feel very comfortable inside 10 foot. I know that contradicts what I said about this one yesterday that I missed, but
yeah, I know what you said.
Yeah, you know, and I don't know if it's you know, it's obviously so. When I did the aim point thing with Jamie Donaldson a few weeks back, you know, I was chatting to him about it because it was starting to crop up then, I think, every so often. And he said the yips is normally caused by, you know, a speed, length of stroke. It's a speed control thing. You know, you might be pulling the putter back too far and then realizing and then really trying to slow it down, or you're pulling it back, taking the putter not back far enough and then really trying to speed up and accelerate through. And at that point, it's very, very hard to, you know, control the club face with the putter. So that's why anyone that follows me on social media, you would have seen the drills that I've been doing with the T-pegs where, you know, I'm just trying to get the stroke kind of the same distance, the same length, you know, on the way back and on the way through. But like I say, the problem is, mate, I'm standing on the putting green and it looks pure, it looks good. You know, so it's obviously, it definitely goes beyond that, but yeah, I'll try anything, any hypnotherapy, herbal medicines, I don't care.
So it's obviously a very difficult thing to deal with, mate, isn't it? I mean, it's something that comes out of the blue, but yeah, I think what Sam's telling you to do is probably right. You know, you trying to kind of work your way through it, I suppose. It's difficult, isn't it? Because literally you stood over every putt thinking you're going to miss it, and you've got to almost try and sort of coach your brain into not thinking that way and kind of get over that part of it, haven't you? I mean, it is difficult, yeah. But yeah, it's a tough one. So, yeah. So what are you going to do then in the short term?
Well, in the short term, I suppose I need to keep doing what I'm doing because I feel like I'm doing the right things. You know, I love putting. I love practicing my putting and short game in general.
Is it only really in comps that you're doing it then? It's just mean something.
Well, in theory, whether it's a comp or not, for me, like every time I play golf, it means something. And even, you know, someone said today, "Oh, just go out without a scorecard. Just go out without a scorecard. Don't worry about keeping a score and just see how you get on." And I'm, you know what, I could try that, but in my head, the way that I process that kind of idea is that, you know what, it doesn't matter how I'm playing or what I'm scoring, whether I shoot 75 or 95, you know, I know if I've, you know, left the putter face wide open from 8 foot, yeah. You know, so the score in theory, the score is irrelevant to me. Like I can play badly, shoot 16 over par and still enjoy myself, but I can, you know, have the yips and want the ground to just open up and swallow me whole. You know, so yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, like, I could, you know, I might try and get out one morning this week just on my own, you know, and just see if it makes a difference. If I'm on my own, I'm kind of void of answers. If I knew the answers, we probably wouldn't even.
Oh, yeah, I was just thinking more along the lines of trying to make you practice a bit more, you know, put some jeopardy on it, maybe. Yeah. You know,
try. I mean, I do that drill where, you know, I've got like six balls in a circle around the hole from, you know, minimum 4 foot.
Yeah,
you know, I walk around that and I'm filling up the cup,
yeah,
just filling it up, you know, like almost like I'm putting into a bucket.
Yeah,
you know, I do the speed drills where, you know, you say I've put the ghost holes down,
yeah,
you know, 10, 20, 30 foot, you know, and they're all within, you know, inches, you know, and, you know, once I've done that, you know, even down to practice, you know, like I see people, you know, on the putting green before a competition, for example, and I have like six or seven balls and I just hit the same putt over and over again, you know, and on the sixth time they get it right. And then they go, oh, you know, yeah, I'm hitting it nicely. But, you know, rarely ever do I see anybody on the putting green with one golf ball, putt to a hole, go and finish up, you know, make sure you hold everything out, go through your whole routine. You know, I feel like I'm doing everything right, you know. And that's probably the worst thing is because I'm scared that it's not something I can practice my way out of.
Yeah, and like you said, there is no answer to it. I mean, it'd be interesting to kind of follow up in the coming weeks as to how you're getting on with it. But I think it's one of those things because there's no kind of physical reason why you're doing it. It's more of a mental thing and cognitive thing. It's just a finding a way of, you know, you will have a round where you put well again. Do you know what I mean? Simple as that. So you've just got to kind of battle your way through it, haven't you, and kind of come out the other side. But I'm sure it's something that, like I say, the other listeners and myself as well, I'm interested to hear how you kind of get on with that. But yeah, we'll check in maybe next week and have a chat. Yeah.
Well, I'm hoping to play Friday. I'm definitely playing. You know, I've got games booked Saturday, Sunday, and I've actually got a scratch knockout match on Monday evening.
Cool.
You know, so there's golf there to be played over the next few days. So we will see how it goes. And like I say, if you don't laugh about it, you'll cry. Generally, that's how I feel.
Because it does get like that. Yeah.
You know, for years and years, and you've said to me previously, you know, sort your driver backswing out. You know, I know I've been a bad driver at a golf one. I've always said, if I could hit the golf ball off the tee, not even crazy distance, 240, 250, in a straightish direction, I've always said I'll be dangerous. I feel like I can get to, you know, I'm not saying I could be a scratch golfer, but the short game's always been good enough.
Yeah.
It would stack up against a scratch golfer. And now I'm hitting my driver probably as well as I've ever hit it. Guess what? Yeah. The other end,
that's golf. That's golf all over.
Yeah, this is true.
But yeah, speaking of golf to be played, we've got some this week on the various tours around the world. So we'll start with the Porsche European Open on the DP World Tour. So this is an event over in Germany, a golf course that I've become more familiar with over the last couple of years, with our man Marcus Armitage winning there 2 years ago. Kalle Samuja goes there as a defending champion. And it's an event that it has kind of flitted in and out of being, you know, a massive money event on the European Tour to maybe not being, and then being again, and it's kind of a bit in and out. I remember Paul Casey won there, was it three years ago, something like that, I think, and the price
2019
was, yeah, and it was a huge event with a really big field, and you know, the last couple of years has not been quite as much money, but still, you know, for, you know, personally, seeing Marcus win there was amazing. And yeah, who knows? I mean, he's trending in the right direction. He's playing some good golf. Had not his best finish last week, but still, it was up there after two and a half, three rounds, and was competing nicely. I think he could do it again. I really do.
Well, there is something about people going back to courses where they'd performed well in the past. Do you know, it's just like you look down the list at the moment and there's so many players. Like, I know we say this pretty much every week, but I generally feel like there's just so many players that you look at and you think, yeah, he's got a really good chance. He could do well. It's a tough one to pick, really. It's a tough one to pick.
Just so many good players, isn't there? That's the thing.
Yeah. I think I'm going with a Højgaard victory, but I'm not gonna say which one. I'm just gonna to be fair, I don't even know if they're both in the field, but one's definitely in the field. Rasmus.
I don't think. Yeah, I think he's favourite, actually.
Is he?
Jordan Smith again playing quite nicely. Bob McIntyre, Torbjörn Olesen, your man Yannick Paul.
Yeah, he could do well at home.
All players that could do really, really nicely. I don't know. It, like I say, it tends to be an event that has thrown up some, you know, winners out of the blue in the past, so you never know, really. But I'm hoping Marcus is going to do really well, and you know, I really want him to bring home his second European Tour win, or DP World Tour win, should I say? But yeah, we shall see this week. But I'm holding out hopes for him. I think he's going to be my pick. All right, I'm
good. Go on.
Maybe Mr. Højgaard might have something to say about that, but we shall see. And then the other side of the pond, we've got personally one of my favourite events.
Yes.
So the memorial, which at Muirfield Village, named after the famous Muirfield over in Scotland, site of Jack Nicklaus's first kind of international performance, I suppose, for the US, playing the Walker Cup in 1959 at Muirfield. So, yeah, it's an amazing golf course. Jack's Place, Dublin, Ohio, stacked field, biggest names in the world. Who's going to win it, Matt?
So there's two names that jump out at me. Look, it's an elevated event, so all the top names are there. It would be very easy for me to sit here and say, yeah, I think Scottie Scheffler will win, because I think the guy's just, you know, even when he's not winning, he's still in the mix. But I keep saying this guy, and if I don't say him again, I'm going to be annoyed, because he's racking up top tens for fun now. But sooner rather than later, Ricky Fowler is going to win again.
Yeah, he is, yeah.
I almost feel like he's playing too well not to win again. I don't think he has a great record at this golf course. But somebody that does is Patrick Cantlay. So if I was to put my neck on the line, I think Cantlay's won this event a couple of times, did a couple of top threes, top twos. So yeah, so if I was gonna put my house on somebody, I'd put it on Patrick Cantlay.
I think that's a good shout, really.
Yeah. In fact, if you look at it, if I'm just looking at the history now, Patrick Cantlay at this event, 2018 finished fourth. 2019 won, 2020 we're going to have to scroll down a little bit. No, can't see him on the top 10, so he didn't do anything that year. 2021 he won again. 2022 finished tied third. So in 5 years there, he's won, what did we say, won twice and two other top threes.
Yeah.
Top four. So yeah, Patrick Cantlay's the guy. Obviously a horse for that course.
Rahm's won there as well.
Yeah.
One that is, you know, he needs to bounce back. Sam Burns.
Max Homer's playing well again.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
Sam Burns is another one. I think he's maybe had a month or so where he's kind of, since the match play, he's been quite quiet, hasn't he? So it'd be good to see him jump up there again. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be, I think, probably one of the top names up there. Rory, you never know, he could do all right. So yeah, again, I just love watching it at this golf course. It just looks so hard.
Yeah.
And which is what I like, seeing these guys have a bit of a struggle. The rough looks pretty thick and pretty deep. So I think we're in for another great couple of days watching the golf this week, mate. But yeah, really good to talk to you again, mate. Glad you had a great holiday.
Yeah, good to be back.
Yes, indeed, and we look forward to this week's golf, and hopefully the dreaded yips improving a little bit for you as well. But for those of you that have been listening and are stalwarts here every week with us, thank you very much. We hope to bring you some great content in the future, and keep watching all of our Golf Shake channels. So whether it's on social media with the likes of Instagram, Facebook and Twitter, or whether it's on the website at golfshake.com or on the YouTube channel as well. So from me and Matt, see you all next week.
See ya.